KUOW 94.9. Hey everyone! Welcome to this month's Radioactive podcast, produced right here at KUOW. My name is Issa Talija. I'm a first-year student at Wellesley College in Massachusetts, and I'm so excited to be back at Radioactive over winter break.
I'm so happy that you're in Seattle, sis!
Hello everyone, I'm Alam Ibrahim. I'm a senior at Rainier Beach High School. You may recognize us from one of my favorite podcasts that we created called A Tale of Two High Schools, about the stereotypes of private versus public education here in Seattle. Now, Issa and I are returning to the studio to co-host for our third time.
Wow, I can't believe this is our third show together. I've heard that the third time's the charm.
Yes, it definitely is, because today's show is very relevant. So, Issa, what is the theme of today's podcast?
The theme of our show is colorism.
Should we start off by defining what colorism is?
Yeah, that's a great idea. So to understand what people in the greater Seattle area know about colorism, we asked Seattleites from different age groups to define what colorism is.
Can you define colorism? No.
I cannot.
What do you think it means?
I'm guessing it has something to do with racism.
Usually when people are put down based on the color of their skin. Like, darker people being put down as a, I guess, social construct.
Can I define colorism? No, I don't think I can. Not in an accurate way.
What do you think it is?
What do I think it is? Colorism. It sounds an awful lot like racism, but I'm not sure if that is the case.
Actually, I've never heard that. I don't really know what it is.
I've never heard of colorism, but it sounds like it could be related to racism.
Colorism, is that a reaction or a set of beliefs against certain types of colors?
I'm not sure what the term means, no.
Colorism I'll give you an example. So like in the black community, colorism would be where people of lighter skin would have a lot more opportunities, a lot more standing as opposed to those with darker skin. And it gives them a sense of privilege that they don't really try to acknowledge. It's not really acknowledged that much, and it's quite toxic, and it comes from this idea that lighter is better, that the closer you are to white, the better you are, the prettier you are, the more just whatever you are, and it creates that difficulty within communities themselves.
I had a friend that she was from Sudan, and her family was really a lot lighter colored, and she was a lot darker than her family, and she was saying that a lot of her family members would say even overt things and say, oh, you should just use the bleach. You would be so much prettier if your skin was lighter.
I think it's interesting how a lot of youth our age didn't understand what colorism was, and it's like literally in front of them like every day.
And a lot of them said they, you know, studied racial stuff and racial history in class, and also like contemporary racial issues, but they weren't able to define what colorism was.
Yeah, it's like, didn't you learn about colorism in those classes?
Yeah, I was surprised.
And it was funny how they always connected it to racism because of the ism at the end.
Right, and then a lot of them actually didn't think it existed in the United States.
They would connect it back to Asia or Africa, like Asians and Africans don't live in America.
Right, like there's no such thing as Asian American or African American.
Yeah. Well, for the older people, they didn't say, I don't know. They were more confident going straight to the answer because I think they thought we didn't know. So it was kind of like, no, dude, we do.
Yeah, didn't a lot of them, like, define it for us? And they weren't, like, able to listen to our response.
Yeah. So one of the ladies we interviewed was talking about how her friend from Sudan was darker than her family and how they would always tell her to lighten herself. In the winter break, my dad's sister came over and she's dark. My dad's brother was clowning on her and telling her to bleach herself, and it was so awkward for me to stand there because I wanted to comment, but I didn't want to disrespect him. Mm-hmm. So I had to say some things like, she's beautiful in her own skin, and defend my aunt, but it was kind of like, I didn't want to do it. It's common sense.
Do you think that's something that happens a lot in your community?
Yeah, I think a lot of people in our community say, like, being light-skinned is cute. Like, they have names, literally. Like, when you're born, they call you, like, a lighty. Like, it's praised so much. Mm-hmm. And when somebody is dark, it's like, oh, God. But it's honestly, like, a lot of dark-skinned girls can slay me.
Yeah. Angela Nguyen is the youngest of three siblings. You might be thinking, that sounds really nice. She probably gets all the attention she wants, right? Well, it's not always that sweet. Angela has had to overcome lots of cultural, societal, and familial pressure to be more like her older sister, Christy.
I'm Vietnamese, and in our Vietnamese culture, lighter skin is embraced. The lighter skin you have, the more beautiful people see you as. So my sister, growing up, she had the lighter skin, like my mom. I think every little girl, or most girls, want to hear that you look like your mom, and she was the one who looked like mommy.
What are some of the experiences you had with colorism, Isa?
Well, as you know, because you went to my graduation party, the Nepali-American community is pretty big in Seattle. And, like, as kind of a tanner person, I personally don't feel like I put myself down or people in my community put myself down, but it interwoven into the actual structure in society in Nepal and here because, you know, how there was a caste system. And, like, ironically, like, the people at the top of the caste system are lighter skinned than those at the bottom. So even though maybe I don't feel like I face it every day, it's just like interwoven into our identities.
Somebody we interviewed talked about it. They were talking about how in their culture, people with higher class are light because they're not in the farm or doing work that gives you, you know, you're in contact with the sun. So they were talking about how a lot of poor people were darker and they were like put down because of that.
We studied this in U.S. history class, like the people who were bred, they would like breed like lighter skinned people and those slaves would be inside the house doing all the cleaning and cooking and they had a higher status, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than the people in the fields.
So, colorism existed even way back then.
Yeah, and it still does now.
But keeping it real, colorism and beauty standards don't only exist in the United States, but they exist throughout global media and in many cultures and social structures all over the world. Have you heard of the skin lightening creams sold in Asia?
Yeah, I have.
How do these companies even advertise whitening products?
So there's actually a recent video that's gone viral of a Thai skin lightening beauty ad selling whitening cream. In the ad, they portrayed blackface in contrast to white skin to make their consumers buy the product.
Actually, lots of schools have been having issues with blackfaces. A lot of students don't understand the history behind it and how offending it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's so horrible that blackface is still used today to contrast what is desirable to what is undesirable. And in ads in so many countries, like the Philippines, fair people who have used whitening creams are portrayed as far more beautiful than naturally tan or dark-skinned people. Okay, do you remember that student of color who was in the Red Square? And he talked to us about how he doesn't think society should address colorism because if we do, it'll become an extreme thing and people won't support it.
Yeah, I didn't agree with that because it's like you're saying, don't talk about racism, don't talk about homophobia because society is going to take it to extreme. You need to talk about it. You need to understand the two sides and understand who's a racist and who isn't. Like, you always have to talk about it. If you don't talk about colorism, dark-skinned girls and dark-skinned people will always be under, like, low-classed.
Yeah, and if you don't have dialogue, nothing is going to happen if you don't engage everyone in it. And also, like, it can't just be people in specific communities. It has to be with everyone, don't you think?
Yeah.
Now we have a unique perspective about the different sides of colorism told by Kamna.
I'm the black sheep in my family. Scratch that. I'm actually more of a white sheep. Here's what a family photograph would look like. My mom and dad and brother, each with their own wonderful shade of brown. And then there's me, pale white with dark blonde hair. If it's a picture in the sunshine, I'll either be covered with a hat or be totally washed out. I was born with albinism. You might have heard of the term albino. It's a genetic condition. Basically, it results in a lack of pigment in my skin, hair, and eyes, so I look even paler and lighter than the average white person. I blend in easily into mainstream America. My parents emigrated to the U.S. from India in the 1980s. Thanks to their choices, I've never really felt different from my family. My family also never commented on how I looked. The icky feeling only starts when I have to interact with people outside of my immediate family. In our Indian culture, fair skin tones are valued and seen as more beautiful, and Bollywood actresses are also seen as fair. But I am too fair to even fit the Indian standard of fairness. Those of us with albinism are so fair, we become foreigners in our own communities. Foreigners are often treated better than fellow Indians when visiting India. I've been at the receiving end of this, and it's outright embarrassing. People are nice to me when I visit. They smile at me and provide extra help. But they still remind me that I'm not one of them. They speak in Tamil or Hindi in front of me, And when I respond, their eyes grow wide with surprise. To me, that's painful. The fact is, I gain a lot of privilege, especially in America, because I pass so easily as white. I can find eyebrow pencils that are the color I need, while my mom struggles to find makeup that fits her skin tone. I don't get empty soda cans thrown at me from a passing car where the driver calls out racial slurs. Unfortunately, this has happened one too many times to my friends who are people of color. At the same time, my ethnicity becomes invisible, and my culture and ethnicity are large parts of who I am. So when I look different from my ethnic peers, it becomes a lot harder to feel comfortable and be part of an Indian community. As soon as I walk into a temple, my fists clench and my shoulders tighten. I'm so afraid that my color defines how people decide to view me. I've lived my whole life thinking that someday I'll look more like my parents, that albinism will just disappear. But that's an impossible fantasy. Just seeing people like Nina Davaluri and Mindy Kaling reminds me of everything I want and can't attain. Here's the thing, though. I have to remind myself every day that as much as I struggle with who I am and how I look, albinism has gifted me a wider view of the world. So, albinism, as much as you irk me, here are some things I guess I'm grateful for. By taking away all my color, you've allowed me to experience what it means to benefit from looking white while also allowing me to know how it feels to not belong. It's a fascinating middle ground that makes me feel like a living social experiment. You've taught me that there's something way more important than being accepted by a group of people who don't know me, and that is to accept the people in my life who see me for the person I am, beyond the superficial. You've taught me that first impressions are inherently judgmental. I know that I'm not who people perceive me to be. They see my blonde hair, but they'll never guess that afternoon chai is the most important part of my day. So chances are, the people I cross paths with aren't who I judge them to be at first glance either. Most of all, albinism, you're teaching me a very challenging but valuable lesson. You've left me feeling stuck in the middle about how I fit into the world of Indian culture and American mainstream society. I don't have a clear place in the spectrum of black, white, yellow, and brown that color discussions about race and identity. I can't stop the world from making judgments about me. But in order for me to really be myself, I have to look past my exterior. I'm done with letting my complexion and what people say about it decide how I feel about myself and my place in the world. For Radioactive, I'm Kamna Shastri.
I think that's a really unique side of colorism that many of us are not even exposed to. It's my first time hearing that side. Mm-hmm. So good job, Kamna.
Props to her.
Thanks to everyone for listening. If you're interested in some books, some great ones on this topic are
Brown Skin, White Minds by E.J.R. David.
Mama, I Want to Be Light Skin, My Journey to Acceptance, Rhonda Bennett.
I definitely plan to read both of those books. Also, thank you to the rest of the Radioactive participants for motivating us with your kind words.
Thanks to our editor, Jenny Osarno, and Lila Kitayev for being awesome.
Special thanks to our amazing executive producer, Lola Garcia.
Yas.
Like us on our Facebook page, Radioactive.
Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, at KUOW Radioactive.
Signing off, goodbye everyone. Remember to love yourself and others.
Talk to you guys next time. Deuces.
Bye.